Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Wendy Godin, whose new book is Sunset Limited, an autobiography of Creole. Wendy Godin is an assistant professor of history at Xavier University of New Orleans. Her work is interdisciplinary, creative, and scholarly, and very, very beautiful. Today, we're talking about her new book, her first, Sunset Limited, an autobiography of Creole, the story of her family's movements through the diaspora. Wendy Godin, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is a book that really is beautiful in every way. It illuminates an important part of our culture. It shines the light on your own family, and it brings new insight into our very discussions of the word Creole. So I thought I might ask you to read a little bit from the introduction because it invites us in.
I will, and thank you for everything you just said. All right, introduction. We come from rivers and bayous, from marshes and deltas, from flowering okra gardens and sugarcane fields, from palmetto forests and coastal grasslands. We are the sharp edges of oyster shell streets and the red dust of brick roads. We embody the threatened islands in the Gulf, our languages in need of rescue, and our bodies, the curving levees that follow the curls of the lower Mississippi River. We are Louisiana, the neglected backwoods of France's Western Kingdom, the unwrapped gift to Imperial Spain, the cheap procurement by the expansive empire of the United States. As are we, Louisiana is a patchwork of territorial binaries, the North Anglo, English-speaking, and Protestant, the South Latinate, French-speaking, and Catholic. The North, hilly with piney woods, and the South, below sea level and sinking. We are the indeterminate waterways, the sedimented wetlands that produce our seafood-based diets, and the prairies where cows give towns their names, and horses still convey trail rides. Louisiana the colony, stolen from the Houma, the Chittimacha, the Tensaw, the Opelousa, the Pascagoula, the Tunica. Stolen from the Natchez and the Choctaw. Stolen from nations whose names melded into those of others, whose names were erased and later resurrected, reformed in the mouths of the living. Louisiana, a stippled peninsula of the South, powerfully remade by Africans, Europeans, and Caribbean islanders, all of various extractions and class positionings, of various ethnicities, unified by their strangeness in this beautiful land. As far as our stories go, and as clearly as the evidence points, my people were Mississippi Choctaw and Chittimacha and Eastern Cherokee, Fon and Yoruba, Amara and Fula, Haitian, German, French, Francophone, Cuban, and Scots-Irish. They were laundresses and seamstresses. They were printers, tinsmiths, and carpenters. They were farmers and oystermen, day laborers and physicians, bricklayers and Pullman porters, cigar makers, plasterers, deacons, priests, and nuns. Shredding every line that time and space and sovereignty drew around their bodies, my ancestors, the named and the unnamed, the dominant and the disempowered, the vowed and the fecund, the invaders and the invaded, the indigenous, enslaved, immigrant, and migrant, turned completely upside down what had been familiar in the world. They made something brand new, the first truly intercontinental tribe. They made the people who made me.
Yes, indeed. Now, this began as part of your PhD dissertation.
Yes.
So talk about the evolution of it into that project, this book.
Well, it's many years since I finished my doctorate in 2005, really just months before Hurricane Katrina. I finished at NYU in history. And what I really wanted to write is the story of my family's migration from Louisiana to California, and then my subsequent return, or what I call a return, to New Orleans. And so when I finished my coursework at NYU, I came to New Orleans to do my research, which consisted of archival research as well as oral interviews. And like so many other people who come here with a purpose and never leave, I have been here ever since. So once I graduated and I was teaching at Xavier University here in Louisiana, I sort of fell away from scholarship. I spent most of my energy teaching, learning how to teach, and raising my son, Aubrey. And so it took some time for me to really get back to scholarship, for me to really get back to research. And it took some time also for me to feel confident in my writerly voice. As a person with a PhD in history, the expectation is that I do a certain kind of scholarly work, but my writing is interdisciplinary. I am interested in storytelling. I am interested in writing in a more creative fashion. I write poetry. I write autoethnography. I write creative nonfiction. And all of that is based on research. And so several years ago, I was contacted by an editor at LSU Press, and she said, "I see your name a lot, but you haven't yet published a book." And so she asked me if I would be interested in writing a book about Creoles. And I thought about it, and I said yes. And so 5 years later, my book has finally made it into the world.
Your family, your Creole grandparents, are part of the westward migration. And the book takes its title, of course, from the train that so many people took west, the Sunset Limited.
Yes.
So tell us about these people and what they came to mean to you and how you came to know them, because they're alive on the pages of this book. They're real people.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I knew my father's parents, John and Rita Godin. John Godin was from Ascension Parish, the region that is called Darrow. It's a highly industrialized region, but when my grandfather was growing up there, his family were sharecroppers. He grew up on a farm. And my grandmother, Rita Rue, was from the 7th Ward of New Orleans. And they married, and as a relatively young couple with three young children, they moved to Los Angeles in 1945. And my father has some very vague memories of his childhood in the 7th Ward on North Miro Street. My mother's parents moved to California much earlier in 1930. And I knew her mother, my grandmother. We called her Mima. Her name was Marietta Roussel. She was from Vacherie in St. James Parish. And my grandfather, whom the family calls Pop, his name was Augustus Lawrence Burns, and he was from Uptown New Orleans. He is the grandparent that I never met. He died before I was born. And there is a chapter about him. He was a Pullman porter.
Yes.
And my mother has so many really vibrant memories of him and memories of riding the train as a child. And so he is the grandparent that is mostly a product of my imagination, photographs, and my mother's storytelling.
Because he's still a mystery to you in ways the others aren't.
That's correct. And I imagine him into being, and I really am so inspired by the risks that he took, and particularly the risk bringing his young wife, my grandmother, and their son, my Uncle Sonny, bringing them to California, settling first in Venice Beach, and then in East Los Angeles and different parts of the city. They left behind their oldest child, my Aunt Lockie. She followed them later. And then my mother was really the first member of our family born in the diaspora in California.
Wow. So when was your first time to come back to Louisiana? Because Louisiana always had such a hold on your imagination.
The first time I came to Louisiana was for a family reunion on the Godin side in the 1990s. And I was here with my grandparents and my Aunt Rosie. And we traveled from New Orleans up the Mississippi River. We visited, we visited Nottoway Plantation, as well as Homa House, or I think it may have an S at the end, Homa's House. And we met extended cousins and family members that I had never met before. And I can remember being here and looking in the faces of my Godin cousins and seeing my grandfather's face and wondering, you know, if they could see my face reflected in theirs. And I remember sort of feeling like these twin things, like, wow, these are, quote unquote, my people. And then on the other hand, these are complete strangers to me, and I'm very different from them. I remember that distinctly.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Wendy Godin, whose new book is Sunset Limited, an autobiography of Creole. One of the things it strikes me as reading this book is that as you write it and do this research and visit these places, you are claiming them for yourself in a very real way. Like you describe driving up Elysian Fields, for example, and knowing where a house once stood that doesn't stand anymore, I think.
Yes.
And then you stop in at a church and meet a priest who happens to have a family connection to you. So it's like the city is urging you to come in and make your home here.
I felt that, and I still feel that. And I know exactly who you're talking about, the priest at St. Joan of Arc. I went there and sat in one of the pews. It's a beautiful, small church with gorgeous windows, stained glass windows. And I was sitting there thinking about my mother's parents who had been married there. And when the priest came in, I introduced myself, and he knew my father's father, who was a deacon at Holy Name of Jesus Church on Jefferson Avenue in Los Angeles. And it was really such a strange and beautiful moment. And I find that these two things are happening simultaneously here in the city. One is that my ancestral ties are here, my history is here, but I was not born and raised here. And so in many ways, I'm a stranger. And I acknowledge that I am not native to New Orleans. It's very important for me to acknowledge that, because my parents' lives, my life, my siblings' lives were shifted in significant ways when my family left here.
And you wrote part of this book at a studio in the woods. There's a picture of you doing beadwork in a studio that is so wonderful. You look so happy and completely immersed.
Oh my goodness. I love a studio in the woods. I had an emerging writer's residency there. And I love that it was an emerging writer's residency, because now, several years later, my book is produced. It's I can hold it in my hands. And I've published other things, shorter pieces, and I'm conducting research on the next project. I loved being right on the river, walking on the levee, imagining my ancestors arriving, their arrivals, probably very painful arrivals. And I distinctly remember the turkey vultures coming and welcoming me every morning and leaving feathers for me on the doorstep. And those feathers are now on my altar at home.
A home altar is a definite New Orleanian, you know.
It's funny. I learned how to create a family altar or an ancestor altar from my Vietnamese Buddhist community. Uh-huh. That is the community that taught me how to create an ancestor altar, which is an interesting yes. and maybe unpredictable thing. But I credit that community with teaching me the importance of having this altar.
And there are parts of this book that feel like a family's scrapbook. There are wonderful photographs, postcards, some really wonderful photographs by one of the great African-American photographers, and the way your family's history intersects with the Pullman Porters, for example, the Sisters of the Holy Family. It's, yes. it's just rich in the way that New Orleans is interwoven.
Yes. As the, I guess, one of the family historians, I keep many artifacts of my mm-hmm. family's history. I have my grandfather's pocket watch, and I often look at it and the engraving on the back. I have my grandmother's two wristwatches and her eyeglasses. I have my grandparents' rosaries. And I also have documents that are taped together. Some of them, pieces were torn off of the documents intentionally to hide, you know, the years in which events happened. And then, of course, the photographs. I feel that my family photographs, and I know most people, if not everyone, feels that these are really precious things and they should be taken, you know, care of. And the photographs are also portals into emotion and memory. And I'm looking at my grandmother's face, the adolescent photo of my grandmother when she first arrived in New Orleans, looking at her unsmiling face and wondering what she carried with her when she left Vacherie and joined her mother in the city.
Mm-hmm. Now, your work received some attention recently with the new Pope's Creole connections as well. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that.
That is surprising and unsurprising simultaneously. Yeah. Of course, his last name and his family names are so familiar to us in New Orleans. And his ancestors' story of leaving New Orleans, migrating and settling in Chicago, where my grandmother's sister, Marguerite, migrated. Of my mother's mother migrated to Los Angeles and her sister migrated to Chicago. And so in our family, we also have that Chicago connection. Mm-hmm. So that story of leaving the Deep South for places where perhaps segregation looked different, or maybe there was no formal segregation, where there were different kinds of opportunities, higher paying jobs, communities of different sorts. That story of migration is a common one. Mm-hmm. And the other story of the migration across the color line is present in my family as well. And one never knows, you know, what the personal motivation was. I spoke with someone about the question of whether or not a person deliberately chooses to cross the color line if they're able to, or if it's sort of a circumstantial thing that someone is perceived as white or someone is perceived as a racial other or as a non-Black person. And they allow that perception to be. And then they reside in that space of allowing that perception to be. Maybe that is their family's history. Who mm-hmm. knows? I have family members who worked as white That's what they would have called it, you know, mm-hmm. that they took a job that was designated for white people. It was a higher paid job, but they didn't themselves identify as white. It was a kind of economic strategy of survival during a time when many things were racialized, including income mm-hmm. and salary.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Wendy Godin, whose new book is Sunset Limited, an autobiography of Creole. I think of you more as a historian of the heart, you know, because you're open to such emotion from everyone. You're open to conjuring their lives with generosity and kindness and insight.
I hope so.
Don't you feel that you've claimed New Orleans as your home now?
I have claimed New Orleans as my home. Los Angeles certainly is not my home anymore. When I go back to Los Angeles, or I go back specifically to Northridge, which is where I grew up, I see familiar places. I hear familiar accents, familiar voices. One of my sisters still lives in Northridge. But I don't feel like I belong there. Mm-hmm. And here in New Orleans, I have a different sense of belonging. But I still have that, in some ways, that newcomer feeling here. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that interested me, made me feel, I guess, kind of lucky as a reader, is near the end of the book, you go to Haiti. It's just like the reverse of a lot of journeys, you would think. But you start this chapter with something along the lines of, most people who come here get here too late. It struck me how much was vanishing in your lifetime that you needed to know about your family, your city, places you lived and had grown up. You know, changes in places like Darrow and Vacherie in New Orleans after Katrina. And it's sort of like you were there in the nick of time to put all this together in this particular way, you know?
I feel that. And that quote is also taken from Trujillo. Trujillo says, I can't quote him exactly, but in his book, Silencing the Past, he says, anyone who comes to Haiti comes too late. Mm-hmm. And I felt like arriving in Haiti just after the earthquake, I was seeing a landscape that had been, you know, riven by this event. But I was also seeing the remnants of what came before. And I was reflecting on my family's migration from Haiti. I am one of the many New Orleans Creoles whose family migrated from either colonial Saint-Domingue or revolutionary Haiti. And I was reflecting on the names and people saying to me, oh, your last name is Godin. Do you have family here? And at the time, I was just struck, you know, unspeaking. How do I answer that question? Yes, no. And I discovered in the book that my answer was, in the past, yes. And so having family there was a timely question, a question about history. Mm-hmm. And yes, many of my interviews were conducted in the years prior to Katrina. And then in this sort of very long post-Katrina New Orleans that we live in, so many of these people are gone. And so I am pondering not only the significance of an event like Hurricane Katrina, but even more so, the significance of Creole pre-integration and Creole post-integration, Creole pre-migration and Creole post-migration. And what is Creole today? Mm-hmm. And that is a conversation that I think that we are having.
And we'll continue to have, I'm sure.
I hope so.
And this is such a rich, rich beginning for anyone. It's a great place to start, I think.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Wendy Godin, whose new book is Sunset Limited, an autobiography of Creole. Wendy, it's a wonderful and important book. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you're welcome. Thank you.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Dylan Hollis signs Baking Across America Friday, June 6th at 6 at the Academy of the Sacred Heart. N.L. Lavin and Hunter Burke discuss and sign their book Of Flesh and Blood Monday, June 9th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. There will be a midnight release party for V.E. Schwab's Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil Monday, June 9th from 10 to midnight at Blue Cypress Books. Andre Perry discusses and signs Black Power Scorecard, Measuring the Racial Gap and What We Can Do to Close It, Tuesday, June 10th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Jordan LaHaye Fontenot signs Home of the Happy, Thursday, June 12th at 6 at the Sybil Gallery. Megan Gettings discusses her novel Meet Me at the Crossroads with Jamie Lee Attenberg, Thursday, June 12th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Adam Gusso discusses and signs My Family and I, a Mississippi memoir, Thursday, June 12th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Historian Phoebe Hayes and poet Margaret Simon discuss their new book, Were You There? A Biography of Emma Wakefield Paulette, Thursday, June 12th at 5:30 at the Roy House, 1204 Johnson Street in Lafayette. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.